Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right with your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. We may not have all the answers, but we'll help you find them. We're coming to you live from Houston, Texas, as we do every Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. Our format is 30 minutes to allow for a short lessons learned application regarding ethics. For call-ins, dial 646-478-3840 or interact in our chat room.
Hello and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right for Thursday, April the 30th, and I'm your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. Like our announcer said, I want to remind our audience for call-ins to dial 646-478-3840 or interact in our chat room. And I also want to remind our audience to like our Facebook page, which is 3 a.m. Strategies. That's 3 a.m. Strategies on Facebook. And today's guest, I'm happy to welcome her, is Tawana Lawler. Tawana, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Listen, Tawana, I know you've got a lot to share, so please just start off by giving us a little bit about your background.
I'm divorced. Have four daughters. They're all on their own. Three are college graduates. They got degrees. I have eight grandchildren, but one daughter has five children, and each other daughter has one apiece. The five children I had to raise for 10 years because she was abusing and neglecting them. And during this time, she was cursing me out and threatening me and a whole lot of things. And, you know, it was really making me sick. And taking care of her kids, it was not fun at all. And so I prayed on it, and I ended up moving from Louisville, Kentucky to California. Lived in California for 8 years, and that's when I really started writing. I was writing before, but I couldn't concentrate because it was always a lot of things going on with my daughter and her little imp hanging out, teamed up with her to come against me for protecting those children. And you know, I did whatever I had to do to protect those children. I didn't care who and, you know, got upset about it.
And right.
What I didn't treat them bad. I treated them well. We went to church. I treated those kids. They went somewhere they would have never went, to California. We lived in L.A. We lived in Brentwood, California. We lived in different places, Palmdale, California. They loved it. When I got sick, and that's why my daughters had to send them back because I couldn't take care of them and sent them back. And they done turned on me now, like I'm the enemy. So that was very hurtful, but I'm okay. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this has been so, I got sick and I'm having to deal with that. And then she's telling my business to everybody. And, you know, I just been through a lot. And she know I've been through a lot because I had children young. My father committed suicide when I was 12. I'm the only girl out of four children. I have three younger brothers. So, and I was daddy's girl, so that was devastating. I didn't have nobody to hug me. Everything's going to be all right. They was pretty much like, okay, he's dead, go on. You know, leave it alone, don't talk. Because my mom wasn't like very emotional. You know, she took care of us material things. And, you know, that I don't think that's good. And I didn't do that with my daughters. But, you know, everything she did, I tried not to do with my daughter. Before I got older, when I was younger, I would go off and clog and curse. And because, you know, they was teenagers and on my nerves. And it was just a whole lot of, and it's in the book because I had to go when I was 19. I'm going to court because my ex-in-law kidnapped my kids and wouldn't give them back and wouldn't let me see them, wouldn't let me talk to them. And I'm like a 19-year-old mother with three children. But I was not going to allow them to keep my children. I fought, and I got my daughters back. But I didn't get to see my daughters for like 4 months. So 4 months seemed like 4 years. I was missing them so bad. And they did every trick in the book and called CPS on me and everything. But, you know, I wasn't abusive. So I never abused my kids. I wasn't abusive. Mm-hmm. And CPS knew that I wasn't abusive. They had clothes, new clothes in the closet and everything. And then I end up getting them back permanent. I didn't have to see them or nothing. But I end up, you know, after a while, I had to forgive them. But I didn't have to like them. And I didn't really like them with them, you know, for my and I didn't even tell when my children got older. See, I'm real close with my daughters, and I tell them everything. I waited till they got old enough to stand that they were kidnapped, because that's what they were. They were kidnapped. And it's a shame. It's a shame that they did that to me, because it devastated me, and I was a teenager, and I didn't have nobody. My mother wasn't there to help me. And, you know, they were retaliating because I left him, but he was beating me. And he was bad. And the day he had to leave, he kicked me down the stairs, a flight of stairs, and my two daughters were sitting on the couch. And he kicked me down the stairs, and they just started screaming and yelling for their mama. And he didn't care. He didn't care. I'm sitting there crying, and they hurt, and they don't like seeing him do that to me. He started kicking me with steel-toe boots on. After he got done, the next day, I said, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I couldn't stand him. I was like, because this went on every day. I got beat every day. I had black eyes. I was young, and I married him when I was 16. His mother said, y'all need to get married. He wasn't beating me then. He didn't start beat me until we got on the way at night. He hit me in my eye, and I had a black eye the next day. My mama said, what happened to your eye? I said, I hit it on the same thing people say. I hit it on the cabinet door. Because I was too afraid. And so I know when people that go through abuse, they try to hide it. And that's what I was doing. I was trying to hide it, but I didn't want my family to know. It was embarrassing. And then, you know, I was young, and I was afraid of him. He said, if you leave me, I'm killing you and the kid. And I was afraid, but I ended up leaving. And I've been strong ever since. It's things, you know, like we spoke about earlier, that happened in my life that, If you knew the whole true story, every interview I went on, people who talked to me about my book, I couldn't do it. But I would have been to kill myself, and that's because I've been through a lot. Because when I left him, I got into another abusive relationship, and that's my third daughter's daddy. I walked in the room one day. He has Anita in his arm. I knew nothing about drugs because I'm a young, naive, little girl. He got so mad, and when he got done getting high, whatever he was doing, he beat me. So then that's when the beating started with him. He started stealing stuff from my house. I bought a car. He stole my car and sold it for drugs. And that, that went on for a while. And then one time he drug me outside. I had got out of the tub with my robe on and pulled me down some steps and tossed me out in the yard like I was dirt. You know, like I was trash, and called me all kind of names in the house. I got him locked up. He came back begging. I went ahead and let him back in, but I started doing what I wanted to do. I would leave and leave him there. I would get a babysitter, and I leave him there for days. And because I didn't even want, couldn't stand to be with him. I was like, here I am in another relationship, and I couldn't understand why. I know now. It's some things I couldn't remember, like when I was younger, and about my dad. And my brother took me out a couple of weeks ago for my birthday, and we were talking about our father. And he said, you don't remember the day when Pop was fighting Mom, and you started I was screaming and hollering, saying, get off my mama. I said, no, I don't remember. He said, you did. And he said, you used to do it all the time. He said, because he, I said, did he fight all the time? And he said, yeah. And I promise you, I don't even remember. I don't remember. But I think that's why I was picking those guys that was abusive. And I did it over and over and over again because I ended up getting married again, you know, later on. And I got married, and this guy was mentally abusive. He never hit me. But I was so used to being abused, I would get so mad. I threw a phone at his head one day, bust his head open because I was just right. Yeah, I had got mean. I had God then, because I was mean, and I left him alone. I filed for a divorce. I said, I'm done, because he was having girls call my house and everything. And I said, you got to go. I'm going through this. So he would never sign the divorce papers. He didn't want to divorce me. But you're going to think you're going to mentally abuse me, kissing girls in my face, taking me to your job, and you messing with the girl on there, and y'all showing me y'all messing around. Y'all hugging, kissing on each other. That's disrespectful. And I'm done.
Right.
So he didn't think I was going to divorce my divorce. And, you know, I haven't been married since. But when I do, it's going to be with the right man. I'm not going to. I've been picking anything. And it was like my self-esteem. And I've been a strong woman. I just don't know why I was so weak. It's the last guy I was with ever since in 15 years. Is the one who gave me this. And I haven't been with nobody. I've been celibate ever since. But I didn't know I was sick until 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the long story. I'm going to skip some things about I had been raped and all that two occasions. But, you know, things was okay. I was working. I had a good job, and I was okay, but I just wasn't happy. I just wasn't happy, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I found out, though, I had surgery. I had hysterectomy. I was laying in my bed crying out to God. He was really calling me, and I accepted that. I knew. I got up because I heard a whisper. I kid you not. I was crying, saying, God, please help me. Please help me. It hurt so much because I had just had surgery. And felt like somebody leaned over and whispered in my ear and said, you're going to be okay. You're going to be all right. After that, I said, oh, no, because now I'm a believer. Because at first I would say God talked to them. I was like, yeah. But then when I heard it, I'm like, I believe it. And I'm telling you, I did not have sex no more. I became celibate. But I messed up. Because I had that surgery and didn't have HIV or nothing. I had the surgery, didn't have sex anymore because after I was healing, heard that voice. For some reason, I don't know. Everything changed about me, my mindset. I stopped going to clubs, everything. Everybody was like, you different. I still read my Bible, but I became really religious. I only listened to gospel music. Now I don't do all that, but I mean, I was in a box. I was like so happy. Then I was like, oh, I don't feel God. I'm so happy. Everything's going to be okay. Yeah, right. I learned that. That's my truth. I thought, no. Finding out you got a disease and can kill you, and after 10 years, you've been celibate. And I found that out. Oh, my God. I was like, God, I didn't even get mad at God, though. Well, I did for a little bit, and then I told him sorry. I just had to sit in my room and tell him, I am sorry. I'm sorry. It's not your fault. But I was mad. I was mad at the guy because with the lady, I had been going to the doctor, and the lady said, it sounds like you have HIV. She said, your symptoms are like HIV, and I had been having some little symptoms, but they were little symptoms. They were going away, and so doctors was like, okay, you got kidney stones. Then they did it, or she said, no kidney stones. So it was always something they thought, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. They said they thought I had lupus, but it said HIV. the HIV will trick you. It will. I had all the symptoms of everything, cancer, multiple myeloma, of everything. They never thought to do testing for HIV for years. And we were in California, and I went to this doctor, and she said, it sounds like that, and she was shocked that no one had tested me for it. And I said, oh, I know I ain't got that, because in 1999, I tested negative, and I haven't been with nobody since then. But I was with that guy. I was with that guy one time, and he was a minister. And that's why I thought he was okay, and my intentions were not even to sleep with him, and I told him. But the day when I was ready to get on my flight, he kept begging. He was like, we're getting married, and I love you, and all that. I'm going to tell you, I didn't hear nothing from him anymore. That made me think something, but I didn't think HIV. I did not think that, but it made me think something wasn't right. But we talked for a year, then all of a sudden, because it was long distance, and then all of a sudden, the period after you get what you want, I think he did it on purpose, and I was mad at him. I was, but I had to pray and stuff, really, and forgave him. But I talked to him. He every now and then, because I didn't talk to him for like 10 years, he just happened to see me on Facebook, and he sent me an inbox, how you doing? And I told him I had HIV, and he said, I don't have no HIV. He got an attitude. And he said, and he's supposed to be a minister now. And he said, he typed a little curse word and everything. And said, don't contact me no more. I said, you ain't got to worry about it. I ain't got to talk to you no more. But then I was like, guilty. But I knew, because I knew nobody else. I knew it was him. He's so dumb. He didn't know. He should have asked me. He didn't know I had a hysterectomy. He didn't know I had, you know what I'm saying? He didn't know I was tested for HIV in 1999. He didn't know that, and I wasn't with nobody else. So he didn't know that. So he was going to try to say, if he had something, I gave it to him. But that's not true. He didn't say that he didn't have it. That's he got smart. Told me not to talk to him. So I was like, I'm going to crawl on up under the rock. I didn't have time to worry about that. I had to worry about this disease I got that I don't want. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want that. I didn't want that. So I'm walking around, and my mind is saying, you got HIV. Look at these people looking at you. You know, I'm thinking all kind of crazy things, and then it got worse. I didn't go to get treated for 2 years. And
why?
I got real sick.
Why Tawana?
Huh?
Why didn't you go and get treated?
Okay. I was depressed and I was in denial.
It was like a real
denial, so I just wouldn't go. And my daughter kept trying to give me, and I kept saying, I'm going to call tomorrow. And this went on for 2 years. I'm going to call tomorrow. I'm going to call tomorrow. And then one day, I guess the HIV, the disease said, I'm getting you. And I started having seizures. I start fainting and falling out and getting dizzy, so I couldn't drive my car. So they started driving because I was about ready to wreck things. I was driving on the other side because I would get dizzy. So look, it was starting to get worse. I started having diarrhea. And I'm telling you, I didn't want to eat. I started losing weight. And then I started having those seizures. And they called an ambulance, and they took me to the hospital. They didn't know what it was. So my daughters, they knew it was HIV. So they took me to the HIV clinic. And then they said, full-blown AIDS and dementia, because I lost my memory and everything after the seizures. I didn't even know who my daughters were. And I couldn't take care of myself. That's why I told you it got worse. The story gets worse. But it gets better. Mm-hmm. It gets better. But, it was so bad that I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to write. I didn't know how to use a computer. I didn't know how to tie shoes, put on a bra. I couldn't do anything. They had to do it for me. Thank God my daughters were there, my two oldest daughters. They had to feed me. They had to give me a bath. They had to wash my hair, brush my teeth, dress me. I couldn't do. I was like a disabled person. I couldn't walk, so I had to be in a wheelchair. And I went from like 130 to 98 pounds.
Ooh.
So I was a, and I looked like I had AIDS, and I had diarrhea all the time. I had to wear Depends, and a lot of the things I can't remember. So they'll tell me some things, and I just cry when they tell me because it's so freaking sad. And
yeah.
Then I feel bad for my daughters because they had to do all that. They had to take care of me. And I was like,
right.
God, thank you. I did well with them to be a single mother and all the things I went through. And we are real close.
Right.
I could tell them, and they could tell me anything. We were close. And I just thank God for them because if I was by myself, I would have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to die. That was the thing I wanted to die. I didn't want to live with this disease, especially when they said it was AIDS. And then I'm like, and they said it was full-blown AIDS. But one day, my daughter came in my room, and I never seen my daughter cry before. And she said, Mama, you dying. You die, it's going to devastate us. And she said, you're going to have to get out of this slump because what was killing me was my depression. And see, people don't understand it. It's going to kill me, but the depression was overpowering everything. And I was so depressed, I didn't care about that. Getting this disease, I felt like I didn't have a life. I did. And, you know, she talked to me, and I didn't. She had they had been talking to me, and I didn't care. Yeah, I was afraid to myself, leave me alone. But that night, something she said to me, because 3 days after I was with that guy, God spoke to me for some reason, thinking about Eddie Man. He said, I'm preparing you for your husband, and I'm preparing your husband for you. So that made me say, I'm not, you know, I'm going to remain like I wanted to do in the beginning. I had HIV, I said, well, I'm better remain celibate because who's going to want me with this disease? And they,
right.
My daughter was saying, well, if he knew you had he's God. So if he knew about this husband, he knew you had HIV. He knew it before you even found out. And I didn't find out till years later, but I didn't care. I didn't care. They were trying everything to make me get out of the club, and I didn't care. I just wanted to die. But when she said it was going to devastate them, that touched my heart. That did. She said it's going to devastate us. It's going to devastate your grandchildren, and that touched my heart. I don't know. But because I was taking, they was giving me my medicine. I was taking my medicine, but I really wasn't eating it. And that's why I was losing all the weight and having diarrhea. And I don't know why, for some reason, it turned around. All of a sudden, I started walking. I started talking. My daughter gave me the computer. She says, start typing. So it was hard for me because I had forgot everything. So I was learning things over. But my second oldest daughter, she would come in that room. She would read the Bible to me every day. And she would pray. And my mother would call and pray. And they was praying me back. And it worked. Because now I'm 100%. I don't have AIDS. I'm not diagnosed AIDS. I have HIV now. The doctors were shocked. My number's undetectable, and my CD4 is almost 200. When I went back to the doctor after my 2 years of being running from the disease, my CD4 was 20. 20 is there. So I was knocking at death door. Yes, I was knocking at death door. They said in a couple of weeks I probably would have been dead. The doctors even told my daughter, you know, she's going to be like this until she died. They couldn't give them a date, but they said it was going to be any day soon because my number's 20. If it goes to zero, you're dead because it's your immune system. And when you get pneumonia, all that. And I never caught pneumonia. They were shocked about that. I never got sick. I never had no illness. It was just those little, you know, God is good, and I just it's a miracle, and it shocks everybody because I'm like, they say, well, you still got AIDS. No, I don't. No. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't fun happening either because I had diarrhea all the time. I didn't like that. And they had to change me. And I'm telling you, my daughter, they wouldn't even have on gloves half the time. And I would be saying to myself, I'm thinking, they going to catch this disease. That's what I'm thinking to myself, but they didn't care. This is how much they love me. They said they didn't care.
Mm.
So, I'm going to tell you one thing they did say, which, you know, sometimes things got to happen. You know, and I feel like now I'm at this point now where I can go share with other people my story. I'm not ashamed of it. And that's what's tripping people because I'm not ashamed of it. I got it, and I got to live with it. And I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to keep on living life. But it took me a while to get to this point. So it didn't happen overnight. It took me a while. I had to go to therapy and everything. My therapist was on point. He was bad. First I was like, I knew I needed. My daughter said, we had a meeting, and we think you should go to therapy. And she asked me if I want to go, and I said, hey, yes, because I knew I needed it. It helped so much. It did. Everything that's in that book came out. And my therapy session, I cried and cried, about things, happened to me when I was a child and, about my dad, because I don't remember too much of anything else. So I really remember it. To teach me.
So Tawana, what do you think you could have done differently to change the course of your life? And I'm talking about go back to when you first got married. What could you have done differently? Do you think now that you can reflect back?
I think I was just I was like retaliating. I wasn't a happy child. When he killed himself, I was devastated. And I was 12 years old. I was devastated. That was my best friend. We ate dinner together. He cooked. I could go to him and talk to him. Go to my mom and talk to my mom. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. We never had a good relationship. Never. Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm living with her. This is a pit stop. I'm on my way to New York, but we moved to New York. My daughter and I. We gypsies. We'll get up, pack our bags, and go in a minute. And, that's how we did. We moved to California. Mm-hmm. People was like, they ain't leaving Louisville, Kentucky. We did. But I think a lot of the path that my life took. It stems from my childhood because it was dysfunctional. It was dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Mom left my husband. She left him. That's why he shot himself. So I wasn't happy about it. As a child, I didn't ever think about it. I didn't think about it until I got older. But she was one of his friends. Mm-hmm. The friend moved in with us the same day that we moved in, and we didn't even know who he was. And so we're like, who is this stranger? And so we said we were going back home to stay with our daddy. Next thing we know, he had committed suicide. He didn't even know we were coming back. He had been crying, asking us. But we were like, we got to talk to moms first to let her know we want to come back. Because, we did want to go back. Because we had a better relationship with him than we had with our mother. Our mother would go out and leave us there, and my brother. So the childhood was dysfunctional, and she don't understand that. She don't want to accept the responsibility. And
Tawana, you have an interesting story, and I'd like to ask you to come back to the show, because there's some questions that I want to ask, and we've had several people come into the chat room, and our time is up. But can we get you to come back, say, in the next week or two?
Okay,
great. And listen, I want to thank our audience for tuning in today, and we will have Tawana back so she can tell you more about her books that she's written and so that you can find more information about her. So I invite my listeners to tune in next Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. And remember, I'm your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. I may not have all the answers, but I'll help you find them.